After several months of getting pressured by bullies and at least one paddling, my sense of survival was getting more refined. I was watching the other table closely, and when they heard those words, "The Gimme Gang," a light flashed over the table. There was a murmur from the crowd, a change in energy like a pride of sleepy lions all waking up at the sound of lunch breaking a twig nearby. They were the Gimme Gang.
Hey, you found me at the Make America Greg Again podcast. Why that name? After my loud diatribe about the president, a friend joked, we should make America Greg again. It sounded good and will make somebody mad. And I came up with a reason for each word. I want to make things. I love science. I love the idea of America, its constitution, its potential, its future. It's not just a flag and permission to be a jerk. Greg is, well, just my name. And saying again implies looking at the past, and that's both history and nostalgia. But it's not resting on our laurels or going backwards, because not everything was great back then. Ben Franklin in a flying car. That sums it up.
Something happened to me and a few other kids in eighth grade, a bizarre and disturbing chain of events that encapsulates a lot of what is happening in Washington the last few years, and in the rest of the country, and the world. And it all relates to a widely read novel used in elementary classes around the United States to study morals, ethics, and philosophy. Maybe you've read it. How did The Lord of the Flies end up in my junior high school? I've had this story bouncing around in my head my whole life because it happened and I remember it. Now that we have had a schoolyard bully in the Oval Office for 4 years, I've been thinking about how to share this story. When I started listing possible stories and titles, The Lord of the Flies popped into my head. But why? I barely remembered studying the book in some class, probably around eighth grade, but my memories were pretty vague. I needed to do a little research to make sure it was the right connection to make. I had forgotten that the main character in The Lord of the Flies is named Ralph, and he's ostensibly the hero, I guess. In an indeterminate future, there is a war with vague references to an atom bomb. An airplane full of elementary school boys is forced down into the ocean near a deserted tropical island. The only adult, the pilot, is missing, and the boys are left to themselves. Ralph becomes the advocate for discipline and trying to maintain civilization on the island. In spite of Ralph's best appeal to reason, the principles of democracy and rational self-preservation are replaced by fear, rumor, and resentment. The rescue fire is allowed to go out. Ralph blames Jack, so Jack and the hunters split, and things rapidly deteriorate. Primal instincts take over the majority. Simon and Piggy are killed, and they are coming for Ralph. To me, the moral is this: left to the laws of nature alone, a strong man or king or dictator is the natural result. That is, this is me now, not the book. Unless people unite, find inner strength, and form a more perfect union that establishes rules of fairness, we will fall into a tribal hierarchy with a usually male monarch or chief or whatever. Our ancient ancestors' brains became larger and developed language, poetry, music, and empathy, and thus began the battle for civilization and against the rule of the strong man, the king, or the don, or basically the law of the jungle. I believe that this is an existential question facing the human species, with adherence to the small L liberal democracy on the right side and any kind of monarchy or supremacy or autocracy on the wrong side. Given the chance to choose, most people would choose a democratic civilization over subservience to a despot. That's what the Great American Experiment is in a nutshell. Well, that was a mouthful. I'm going to let that fester for a while and set the scene for what happened on that day in eighth grade. You need to know three things about me and my junior high school about 50 years ago. Number one, cultural inheritance of the school ecosystem within the nuclear family. Number two, methods of corporal punishment in mid-century American educational methods. And number three, my station near the bottom in the social pecking order. The first is cultural inheritance. This means that young people learn from older people who learn from older people when they were young. Your big brother comes home from elementary school and tells stories about that school, and you inherit that knowledge about the culture of the school, giving you a head start when you get there. We've been doing it for 100,000 years, telling the little ones which object is edible, which animal to stay away from, the cliques and social rules, which teachers are hard graders, which are easy, which electives to take, what the locker room is like, and which teachers use a fraternity paddle to impress upon young minds the importance of following rules, to help the young person who thinks they are above the rules to learn that they, in fact, should want to follow the rules. Say what? Fraternity paddles? What century are we talking about? Well, here's the second bit of cultural knowledge you need to know going into my junior high. They were everywhere back then. My friend's dad had his hanging on the wall in the basement. My sister's boyfriend showed me his fraternity paddle when I was 8 or so. TKE, for Tau Kappa Epsilon, it said. But I couldn't really imagine what it was for. The paddle was made of wood, mostly flat, typically about 2 to 24 inches long, maybe 2 or 3 inches across, maybe 1 inch thick, and generally had round edges so as to minimize scarring and therefore evidence. It was used in initiation ceremonies by secretive clubs, fraternities, and societies, I'm sure almost exclusively by men, and was typically decorated with the symbol of the fraternity or club to which you were being initiated. Usually it was voluntary. Even its most fervent fraternity fans wouldn't advocate for its use in assault or abuse upon the unwilling. At least not in public. On 13-year-old. Unless maybe their frat was Kappa Kappa Kappa. I was never in a fraternity. My college considered the Greek system to be a distraction at best, and therefore I did not have that decision to make upon entering college. My personal experience on the receiving end of the paddle was limited to my junior high school. I'm sure almost every male teacher in the school district was a graduate of the Greek system in their college years. So this story is about how I was forced to join a club I had no desire to join, with an initiation ordeal that would have tested the limits of even the most devoted freshman frat boy. If it happened now, there would have been firings, lawsuits, a media scandal. The third thing good to know was my personal and family situation going into eighth grade. Ralph, my dad, was a Christian pastor, a good one, not a crazy one. He married my mom just before the war, and they had a 1 year old by the time of Pearl Harbor and three more in 5 years. Their story is worthy of its own episode. They took his mission very seriously and tried hard to help people in very dire and tragic circumstances throughout his life. Yay, Dad! Mom was just as great, raising the first four kids and being asked to feed additional mouths more often than was comfortable or affordable. I was the fifth child, a late surprise, 8 years behind my brother. By the time we moved to a small college town in southern Minnesota, I was the only one left at home. The first year was a historically cold and snowy winter. The house was dark, gloomy, and cold. I was the new kid 6 weeks into fifth grade. The teacher passed out graded assignments and read each score out loud, so we all knew each other's grades. In case you were wondering, that did not make me Mr. Popular. My small size and quickness worked to my advantage, sometimes, because I could outrun some confrontations and earn some respect in playground games and indoor dodgeball. But I was still the smarty pants new kid who got picked on by the bigger, dumber kids more than once. If you're used to being king of the hill in sixth grade, suddenly being thrust into a much larger pool, polluted with uncertainty and anxiety, and populated with 15-year-olds who are beginning their hormonal surge, it can be quite a shock. If you're not the king of the hill anymore. But for me, in the lower strata, the larger population made me more invisible. Now there were plenty of little fish to get picked on. Being in the larger pool worked to my advantage. It was an upgrade. For about a month. Our house was only 50 yards kitty-corner to the junior high, a turn-of-the-century two-story dark brown brick building with high ceilings. There was only a half basement, the large shop class with windows facing one street across from upper middle class homes, including one of my best friends, the one with the paddle on the basement wall. For 2 years, the outside of the school had been a frequent playground for me and the neighborhood kids to play football in the front yard and to play basketball and baseball in the back. I knew the outside better than my backyard, but in seventh grade, I had to go inside. in my first month in English class, the alphabet caused me to sit next to one of the tough guys from a rough home in a rough part of town. Likely a symptom of cultural inheritance, it was a macho tradition for boys to challenge other boys to a fight between two garages just barely out of sight of the school. Once the challenge was issued, whispers swirled through the hallways, "There's going to be a fight." I watched one or two of these bouts, along with about 20 other kids. No one died. No one got seriously hurt or scarred. But there was certainly emotional scarring, especially me. I learned something. I did not want to hurt anyone else or get myself hurt. Thanks, Dad. So a month or so in, being anonymous was losing its power, and the tough guy in English issued me the challenge. He wasn't big, maybe an inch taller than me, I'm sure. I had a more stable home and better diet and could outrun him in a race. But I wasn't challenged to a race. Wow, that'd be sort of cool, right? "Come on, let's do it. Are you chicken? I'll race you around the block, and then we'll do chin-ups. I'll meet you at the garage at 3:30. "All right, good sir. I shall meet your challenge and endeavor to best you with my speed and physical prowess on the field of athletic competition." No, he wanted to fight. So I just stared ahead and tried to ignore him. I have no idea if he showed up to an expectant crowd because I went home in the other direction after school. Perhaps he tried again the next day and then gave up. Perhaps he was relieved that it didn't happen. I think my tough guy nemesis became a dropout later that year. I only had one strategy, avoidance. This worked for the rest of the year and beyond. I've still never been in a fight or even been punched in the face. But there was that thing in eighth grade. For eighth grade, I signed up for shop class, and for fall semester, we had mechanical drawing. The drawing studio was a too dark room with tall ceilings and tall windows which looked out over the front yard of the school where we had played football. I was in the back left corner where I could easily see the little store across the street where I had spent much of my allowance for 3 years on candy, cards, and comic books. And where some student in the future would convince a future clerk to risk future prison to sell beer to future underage students. Each of us had a big drawing table of softwood that elevated at the front, so we had an inclined surface on which to tape down our special paper, with a railing at the bottom to catch pencils and erasers. Mechanical drawing is now obsolete because of computer graphics. But at the time, this was the first step to making things from nuts and bolts to car parts to trains, bridges, and rockets to the moon. In factories, drawings like these were given to men with hard hats to make objects out of iron and steel. They had to be completely clear, unambiguous, precise, with accurate dimensions. There were dozens of rules to follow. We spent days just learning how to make our letters look exactly like the models in the book. Eventually, we were given the task to copy the example displayed at the front of the room, a rectangular block with dimensions. Dimension lines had to be excruciatingly precise, light and thin, and the arrows at the ends had to be just so. The discipline and accuracy expected from eighth graders who could barely sit still for 2 minutes or hold on to a pencil was absolute lunacy. We used a super hard lead pencil sharpened to a needle point to lightly sketch the object with straight edge wooden T-square plastic triangles and erasers. Then we would use the softer and darker pencil to make the certain lines more visible. The next lesson was a rectangular block with a notch cut out, and then complexity increased all the way up to hex head bolts with threads. Each had three right angle views, front, side, and top, and then eventually we learned angle and perspective views. Our guide on this journey to representing imaginary metal blocks with drilled holes on two-dimensional paper was a tall man with long, for the time, wavy white hair, big lips, thick glasses, and a dingy, calf-length tan shop coat with large pockets. Because of his ethnicity and white top, I'll call him Mr. Alps, like the mountains. Mr. Alps had a big, low voice and talked slowly with something approaching a slur. He had been teaching this class since pencils were invented, and he had it memorized, and would drone on and on for minutes without pause, seemingly without breath. He just assumed that we were paying attention, but he had no idea. Observing feedback from the audience was not in his wheelhouse. I was a good student overall, and even with no clue as to why we were learning any of this, I still paid attention and applied myself because that was my nature, and still is. I believe that class helped me develop an accurate vision, spatial perception, good handwriting, and other skills that allow me to function in the world, even to this day. I was trying to be a good citizen in the micro society inside that classroom. Not all of my peers had the patience or saw the benefits or the value of learning the skills or the discipline. Another cultural meme gleaned from cartoons, like everything in my brain at that age, was the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. I mostly listened to Mr. Decorum. Others listened to the imp on the other shoulder, Mr. Mischief, and they were about to express themselves. So not too far into September, while Mr. Alps was explaining the importance of keeping your pencil sharp, the aforementioned cultural inheritance bubbled to the surface. I heard one kid nearby whisper to another one, something he had no doubt learned from an older brother. If you tell him there are little green men out on the lawn, you can get him to go and look outside. Go ahead, say it. Which also had the side benefit that he'd briefly quit droning on and on about the importance of making your I's vertical and your O's round. It'll be entertaining for 1 minute. Did the big brother tell him what would happen next? Or was that left to be a surprise? Mr. Alps, Mr. Alps, look outside. There are little green men outside on the grass. Little green men, Mr. Alps. What? He drawled as he made his way across the front toward the window. Perhaps he had his own history of seeing things. He had to turn left a little bit to reach the window and did a long visual sweep to the right and said, Where? I don't see any. Say, you're pulling my leg. Come on up here, boy. Come on, I'm going to help you learn a lesson. And he waved him up to the front of the room. The boy sheepishly walked up to the front. Mr. Alps took a pliers out of his enormous pocket and said, Now I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to help you, boy. He stood behind the boy and pushed his head slightly over to the left and used the pliers to grip a bunch of hairs in front of his right ear. He then started to pull the boy's short hairs up in the air, causing the boy to rise up to his toes to minimize the tension. I'm going to help you, boy. Then followed the boy's squeals of pain. Well, that was interesting. Anyone with ideas unrelated to technical drawing held their tongue for the rest of the hour. But tomorrow is always another day. People are people, kids get bored, and Mr. Mischief convinces you to push the envelope. Push that reward button again. A few days later, under pressure, it was someone else's turn to join the club and earn the badge of dishonor. And again we hear, Mr. Alps, there are little green men on the lawn. Now Mr. Alps remembered the other day, so he didn't look this time and asked the offender, Would you like some help? No, sir. Okay, back to the importance of getting just the right slant in your dimension numbers. But boredom is not easily dismissed, and Mr. Mischief goaded him again. So he tried again. Mr. Alps, Mr. Alps, little green man outside. Now Mr. Alps was pissed. He didn't look. He didn't pause. He went straight for the pliers. Started walking towards his seat and saying, I'm going to help you, boy. And he helped him out of his seat just a few feet away from me. I'm sorry, Mr. Alps.
Have you learned your lesson?
Yes, Mr. Alps.
Okay, I hope so.
A week went by, and boredom returned for some, and the predictable scamp Mr. Mischief returned with a pencil in his hand. This time it was that old pencil rolling off the table gag, breaking the needle point and requiring the owner to walk up to the one pencil sharpener in the room and crank away 5 seconds longer than necessary while making faces for the audience behind Mr. Alps's back. It was easy enough to prevent, but expected to happen occasionally. When it happened 5 or 6 times in quick succession and there was a line at the sharpener, the canny Mr. Alps suspected something. In a verbal attempt to restore order, he went on about how you should put the pencil down against the rail at the bottom of the board, thus preventing it from getting up momentum and rolling off onto the floor, breaking that ultra-fine point we had sanded to perfection. Peace and quiet lasted about a minute until one of the bullies, the alpha in this tribe, goaded a non-alpha into misbehaving and the pencils dropped again. And again. The next pencil dropper, he got some help. with a pliers. Over the next few days, Mr. Mischief continued to attack Mr. Decorum, and Mr. Alps continued to help boys improve with his pliers. Finally, after one of the regulars exclaimed that little green men had returned to the front yard, it was too much. This was one of the bullies that had pressured others to misbehave, and his face was well known to Mr. Alps, so he made the decision to bring out a more powerful weapon of deterrence. He reached for the paddle. It had been hanging up there in the dark corner the whole time, largely unnoticed in the dark room.
"I'm going to help you, boy. Bend over and hold your ankles."
He positioned himself so as not to hit anything with his windup, and he hit one strike across the backside of the mischievous youngster. The boy's face was red, and he tried really hard to be brave and act proud of his admission into the new club. I did not have the benefit of a big brother giving me any warning. I did not see this coming and was terrified. Maybe it had been happening for years in this school, or maybe this was one giant leap for this class onto a strange new world. I had no idea, only dread. Somehow, for the rest of the fall, my invisibility powers returned and I escaped the attention of the bullies. I avoided getting such a helpful lesson from Mr. Alps in drawing class. But memes travel quickly, like a virus, even before we knew them as memes. And gym class was a perfect environment for more than one virus to spread. As if graduating from a little grade school where you know where you fit in, and maybe, if you're lucky, that place is on top. If that isn't dramatic enough, at that age you're going through all kinds of changes physically. And physical education gets real, with sweat and smells and puberty and boobs and jockstraps and hair and locker rooms. God, how does anyone ever survive 7th and 8th grades? I did fairly well in running, jumping, starting and stopping, but not so good at reaching and overpowering. I escaped some of the shame that traumatized others in the way too public arena of gym class. We had to climb a rope to the top of the basketball court. There were no pads on the floor. Mr. P was our boy's phys ed teacher, and he was a nice enough guy. He used big words like intestinal fortitude and kinesthetic sense, decades before I heard them anywhere else. I liked Mr. P and had respect for his fitness, healthy looks, and his philosophy that came through in his instruction. Well, it didn't take long for Mr. Mischief to infect the gym class, and I was witness to several of the bullies act up intentionally, volunteering to join the club and proudly get the board from Mr. P. It was initiation by teacher. Boys in the know said he was harder than Mr. Alps, which made sense. He was 40 years younger and still in good shape. One day in gym class, we were doing agility runs back and forth, or maybe it was gymnastics. One of the club members was putting pressure on me to volunteer to get the board. "No, I don't want to." "Come on, you chicken. You afraid?" "No, I just don't want to." Of course I was afraid. I was terrified. Truly, I didn't want the pain. I didn't want the criminal label. I didn't want to disappoint Mr. P. But I caved. I should have walked up to Mr. P and said, "That kid is trying to force me to do something." But I didn't. I don't remember what I did to misbehave, but it was clearly a violation of a rule. And disappointed, Mr. P dutifully performed what he thought was his duty, helping me like Mr. Alps helped the boys in drawing class. It's hard to convey to the lucky and inexperienced the sharpness of the pain of a wooden paddle striking your tightened gluteus as you are holding your ankles. Said paddle being swung as if to hit a home run by a strong, healthy adult twice your size. True, the mass of the paddle is nowhere as much as a baseball bat, but that makes the impact superficial, not crippling, and helps the attacker to avoid assault convictions. I did not accept membership in that bullies club. I did not wear it as a badge of honor. I saw it and the bullies who encouraged more of it as a threat. The holiday break gave some relief from the growing pressure from the bullies and a change of classes. January brought the whole drawing class down into the metal and wood shop. The school was on a slight hill, and the shop room was an extra-large room in the basement level with an odd concrete ramp from the hallway leading down to the center of the room. There were three sides of windows with a long wall looking out over Pleasant Street. There was an exit door, for safety, I imagine, but it was rarely opened. On the west side of the ramp was a storage room built out of the main room, and the smaller quarter left open was filled with a large table surrounded on two sides by a series of small furnaces for heating metals. The other side of the room, twice as big, had workbenches, a table saw, a bandsaw, a drill press, and various hand tools hung up on pegboards with the shape of the tool drawn in paint, so there was no doubt what was missing or where it should be returned. There were two tables with chairs in the remaining space, with about eight chairs each. Mr. Mischief's followers and a few others sat at the table closest to the ramp, and the rest of us, followers of Mr. Decorum, sat at the other table nearby. For the first few days, we sat and listened to the many rules of safety and behavior, explanations of the equipment, and his philosophy of life and education by our old helping friend, the drawing class teacher, Mr. Alps. He was not at a loss for words when it came to advising the young generation about growing into responsible adult citizens. "There are people out there who are always being selfish. They want this, they want that. Always saying, gimme this, gimme that. It's always gimme, gimme, gimme. That's not a way to live. You don't want to be a member of the gimme gang." After several months of getting pressured by bullies and at least one paddling, my sense of survival was getting more refined. I was watching the other table closely, and when they heard those words, "the gimme gang," a light flashed over the table. There was a murmur from the crowd, a change in energy like a pride of sleepy lions all waking up at the sound of lunch breaking a twig nearby. They were the gimme gang. Said it aloud, proudly, for the hour, practicing, listening, letting it reverberate, resonate. The gimme gang. Okay, to set the stage for the next act, here's what shop class was going to be. In an era when I was able to purchase an electric soldering iron at the hobby shop for a few dollars, our school was going to teach us the method from the Middle Ages. We would take an obelisk-shaped iron weight, like a 3-inch Washington Monument, at the end of an 18-inch rod and handle, in effect a branding iron, heat it up in a miniature blast furnace, and use the point to solder tin plates together. We would cut the four corners out, leaving a tab to fold into the next side, and then fold the four top edges over to eliminate the sharp cut edge. Fold the four tabs in and the four sides up, and solder the four tabs together at the corners from the inside. A short, boring, stained, ugly little tin box that would hold paper clips, screws, or other knickknacks in grandmother's houses around this town and state for decades to come. Good skills to have, because we were likely to have a blast furnace in our future garage. Project 2 had two parts using different materials and skills, attached with screws. We would use the furnace to heat and then hammer an iron rod into an S shape and drill a few holes in the flattened ends. In the woodshop, we would use a bandsaw to cut a 4-inch circle in some hardwood, the knob. The knob would then be sanded until silky smooth and then varnished to bring out its natural wood grain beauty before assembly. Two screws would attach the arm to the wall, and one screw would hold the knob in place away from the wall, giving room for our favorite father's favorite fedora to hang nicely. See how many things we'll be able to make in our personal blast furnaces? That's it. Two projects. 75 hours of class time to fill. 16 bored, scared pubescent boys, a room full of dangerous tools borrowed from an ancient dungeon, and a senile supervisor who couldn't hear well in a library, much less in a shop full of blasting flame and screaming power tools. What could possibly go wrong? Hey, until I get up to speed and get a Patreon page or actual sponsors, maybe you can help me out. I started two online stores with shirts, hoodies, mugs, baby onesies, stickers, and other miscellaneous printable products that you can order. Everything is printed in and mailed from the United States, but I can't vouch for the origin of the garments, probably Indonesia or Vietnam. One store is for hot and potentially controversial topics, so I might get disowned by my right-wing friends, if I have any. So far, everything is making fun of or shooting sarcasm at the winner, or actually the loser of both the biggest bully award and the biggest baby award for 4 years running. You know, the one who stole my acronym, MAGA. Because I'm almost at San Francisco, it's called fogcitytees.com/MAGA. That's fogcitytees.com/MAGA. Buy a big baby onesie for your little liberal and add a matching tee or hoodie for thee. The other store is more for cute and artistic type stuff without any spray tan or anti-authoritarian Trumpism. It's called graphicstyle.com/MAGA, but you have to spell graphic with a K. No spaces or symbols. You'll find more shirts and hoodies, bags, posters, and onesies for the grands without the sharp political edges, but cool designs and cuteness. graphicstyle.com/MAGA. The slash MAGA tells me where you heard the word. They are also both on Facebook. Thanks for sticking with this story so far. I hope you find the second act worth the wait. Here it comes. Shop class. Some of us are cutting tin, some are heating iron rods, others are cutting hardwood discs, and some are sitting down planning their projects or sanding. Or scheming. It was only a matter of a short time before one of the gimme gang would find a new way to continue the initiation ritual established in drawing class and took inspiration from Mr. Mischief. After a rotation of stations, the tin snippers had a chance at the furnaces while the rod hammerers had a chance at making a round piece of wood, and the third group sat down to mark and cut some tin next to the knob sanders. Eventually, everybody had a chance to learn all skills and put together a fairly useless tin box and a soon-to-be-ignored hat rack for exactly one hat. That was the plan for the whole semester. Some of the gimme gang were sanding their circles of wood into nice smooth shapes, which would then be mounted onto the S-shaped bar. Their table sat next to the ramp. Mr. Mischief wondered what would happen if a semi-round hat knob was taken up to the door and rolled down the ramp. What would happen if Mr. Alps saw it rolling across the floor? This is the curious mind at work. Acceleration due to gravity. Physics and psychology in the same experiment. Who said science was boring? One of the gimmies gave it a roll. Mr. Alps didn't notice. Let's try it again. To the patient come the rewards. But sometimes you have to be assertive. Look, Mr. Alps! The words, "I'm gonna help you, boy," rang out in the noisy wooden metal shop for the first time, bringing back all those memories of those long 4 weeks ago before the Christmas break. No pliers here. Mr. Alps reached for his trusty helper hanging up on the wall for a quick application of life lesson B is for board. And so the smacking began. After a few days of knob rolling and smacking, the gimmies upped the ante. Two of them had a knob race down the ramp. And then one of the gimme watchdogs assigned to the teacher yelled, "Mr. Alps, look!" He turned around and saw a rolling hat knob derby race. Well now, there were two boys that needed help. Get old Faithful off the wall and whack a few moles. After each of the gimme gang had re-pledged to the Mr. Mischief fraternity at the hands of Mr. Alps, they began to notice that our table was not having as much fun as they were. How considerate of them. The gimme gang started to pressure the boys at our table to get the board. Plus, watching us get smacked was just as much fun as getting it themselves, and a lot less painful for them. One by one, most if not all of the beta table took their reluctant turn at rolling the knobs down the ramp. Roll the knob. It's so mundane. It's becoming the norm. My turn. Now put yourself in Mr. Alps' shoes for a moment. What was he thinking on the third day when it seemed like every boy in the room was rolling their project down the ramp for the entire hour? Was there actually any thinking taking place? Who said the younger generation didn't think creatively? Who said they weren't learning life skills? If the enjoyment of watching Mr. Alps take a few swings at someone else is the goal, how much more efficient would it be to take the middleman out of the process, to be the swinger instead of the observer? Now we are learning economics. Ever creative in the ways of mischief, one of the gimmies began an extra credit project by making his own paddle, in secret, but in plain sight. There was plenty of wood to choose from, and all the tools you could ask for, and minimal supervision from the befuddled Mr. Alps, who was easily kept busy over in the furnace area while unauthorized cuts were made on unauthorized projects. He was not aware of its creation, but we at the other table sure were. Made in America. Here's another science lesson. I, the budding anthropologist and physicist, had seen my share of paddles in the world by then, and I noticed that some paddles were flat and smooth, but others had a long, sharp groove cut down the middle, making the impact with the flesh extra painful, I presume, or else why bother, right? And because the air has to get out of the way of this flat panel being swung through it, still others were modified by cutting several holes along its length. Extra edging to create more sting. Years later in engineering classes, I learned that holes would allow the swinger to accelerate faster and make the terminal velocity faster than the undrilled design. The increased speed makes up for any momentum loss to the decreasing mass. Slightly. It's a good engineering trade-off. We followers of Mr. Decorum at the beta table, unwilling conscripts to the gimme gang's fascism, could see that multiple weapons of butt destruction were under construction. And thus came the day of the singularity, which is finally right around the corner. It would be interesting for behavioral scientists to know at what stage in the societal evolution that it occurred. How many days of escalation did it take to reach the point of complete chaos and madness? I don't know what month it was. I don't remember some of the closing details, but I remember parts of that hour with searing crystal clarity. One day, one of the gimmies secretly making such a weapon under the nose of the should-have-retired last-year instructor had reached a stage of development that he thought a test swing was in order. So he casually sauntered over to our table and politely asked one of our crew to accompany him up to the clear space at the end of the ramp, and another gimme began to have need of attention from Mr. Alps over in the corner of the furnaces. How did that line get crossed? What was going through the victim's mind? Why was this happening? It was the natural progression of humans in a closed ecosystem where there was no enforceable set of rules of behavior. Now, Mr. Alps was still busy, so gimme number one handed the paddle off to gimme number two, who chose another one from our table, and there was no escape, because there was no supervision. We all got it soon enough, from our fellow students in the class. It was an orgy of pain and abuse. I have always remembered the number 9 as the number of whacks I received in that hour. I'll just say 6 in the interest of allowing for error. But really, it was 9. You don't forget some things. You'd expect that Mr. Alps would pull his head out of the furnaces on occasion to look elsewhere, so there were periods of unstable peace. But they only lasted a few minutes until another gimme had a similar issue in the furnace area. One of the tragedies of that day was that Mr. Alps missed having the pleasure of seeing his eager students practice his most memorable life lesson on other students in his class. It was noisy, sure, but the shop had plenty of noise to cover the occasional report. Again, it was my turn. Then another gimme was at the bat. One whack here, another there. Pass the paddle. Your turn again. His turn. Pass the paddle. Here comes another one. After a half dozen whacks across the ass, it hurts like hell. What about your self-image, your confidence in authority, in society, in yourself? Some boys were quietly crying, others were openly laughing, proud of their clever conspiracy, proud of the ability to take advantage of an old man's dementia, proud of their power over others, proud of their name, the Gimme Gang. Eight boys were physically assaulted, probably with a total number of whacks numbering in the dozens, at least 40, in a matter of 45 minutes, all with the alleged instructor in the room. What went through the mind of a victim like me? Why didn't I object? Make a scene, run to the instructor to tattle. Why didn't I speak out and find someone to come and stop the carnage? Why didn't I fight back? Why didn't I grab some iron and muscle my way into the furnaces just to escape?
I might have been safe over there.
Near the end of the hour, one of the least rabid predators, by definition, he was last in line to step up near the end of the hour, so he reluctantly took his turn to impress me into the service of his baseball swing practice. Maybe he still heard faint echoes of his conscience and his heart wasn't really in it. Maybe he thought this has gone too far, or at least far enough. Maybe I could tell from his expression that I could resist this time and succeed. I was standing with my backside up against one of the wood shop tables. I could see Mr. Alps being kept busy leaning over someone's work across the room at the furnaces. My resolve and resistance and pain just welled up within me, along with tears probably, and I refused to move when tugged. He tried to turn and bend me over right there. I stiffened my body and remained rigid with my backside hidden. Perhaps I knew the time and thought I only had to hold out for a few minutes till the end of the Lord of the Flies nightmare that the class had become. Either way, I made it. After a few tries, he gave up. That was my last stand. I can be proud of myself for that 1 minute in that class. I'm pretty sure that was the end of it. The bell rang. And that was the end of the class and the end of the week. Except for sitting through band practice the next hour. That was rough. If only I had played percussion, I could have been standing. But no, I had to sit and play trumpet. At least one of my co-victims was also in the band, but the shame was too great, and we didn't look at each other. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't talk to other victims. I have no recollection of my own mind during those weekend hours. Early Monday, I was taken out of my first class by the assistant principal, Mr. M, and brought to a small supply closet which had a desk and a chair and apparently had become a makeshift interrogation room. He asked if I had been a victim of the violence on Friday, and I said yes. He asked me about other victims, and I hesitated. He started asking me about one after another, and then I confirmed each name that he had heard from someone else. He asked for names of the perpetrators, and I declined to name them, still stupidly operating under a don't be a rat code of honor. I don't recall if he named them off or just let it go. I believe he must have asked me to keep it quiet. That would be the natural thing to do. Even then, they were concerned about the news becoming an inconvenient scandal that would rock the town. I have nothing but gratitude and respect for whoever told his parents. Thank you so much. If the madness hadn't stopped there, somebody might have ended up branded, or worse. I don't think Mr. Alps was in class later that day. I'm convinced that if he had been, that fact would be stuck in my memory along with the rest of the story. Which makes me think that shop class had a forgettable substitute teacher. I don't really remember anything of shop class in general for the rest of the spring. As far as I know, Mr. Alps was never seen again in that school. I have a feeling his overdue retirement became effective immediately. I was there, and nothing much out of the ordinary happened. I took home my finished projects. I remember having the box for a time, and the hat rack made it well into the next decade before disappearing. It was a very different time back then. The news never escaped the school, to the best of my knowledge. It was hermetically sealed within the walls. It did not become a national story or a local story. It didn't even become a buzz or a whisper among the students, as far as I could tell. I didn't tell friends. We did not form a victim support group to work out the PTSD symptoms. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just to say that in my experience, there was not a mention of it in public ever by anyone. So strong was the indoctrination of the macho code. Stay tough, don't rat. To use a 21st century term, how did I process all of this? I didn't tell parents or friends. You may be surprised to hear that I got back up on that sawhorse and took shop again in the ninth grade in the same scene of the crime room from a new teacher who was a young, alert, businesslike, and in every way the opposite of Mr. Alps. I don't think it's related, but you never know. I missed 40 days of school that year due to a series of illnesses, but that's another podcast. I have clear pictures in my mind and remember some of the names of boys in both groups, but not all of them. I have told the story maybe 2 times over several decades, enough to reinforce the key points so they're not forgotten. I didn't compare notes with anyone at our 5th, 10th, or 25th high school reunions. I've had occasion to talk to one of the gimmies at one or more of these reunions. Not about the singularity, of course, but about general school nostalgia and small talk. And that was decades ago now. Little green men are well known in the nostalgia of my circle of close friends who attended that school, but that event has never been a subject of discussion. Be like the pond that accepts the pebble, radiating ripples for a moment, and returns to peace and stillness. That's from Kung Fu, the TV show, sort of. Pacifism and Zen is a big part of that show, believe it or not. I don't harbor any grudges. My dad preached forgiveness and Christian charity from the pulpit, and my mom set an example of charity from the home. I must have learned something from them. The Kung Fu came a couple years later. At least some of the perpetrators were from homes less bountiful than mine, in love and abundance. I know that one of the gimmies died quite young, and maybe more of them are no longer with us. If any of the participants of this psychodrama wish to contact me, I welcome any efforts to connect, correct, amend, or augment this story. In writing this, I have clear pictures and memories, but the day-to-day timeline was something I had to create to tell the story. I know where it happened, what year it happened, and what happened to me. If any blame is worth assigning, it is to the pervasiveness of the inequality of power between bullies and dweebs, jackasses and nerds, the powerful and the powerless. The current trend of child abuse and Me Too scandal shows that something has changed. Sometimes these events are not completely covered up and disappeared as much as they were before. But they also show that toxic, macho, or abusive behavior is still pervasive in our culture 50 years later. Back then, one group learned that it's okay to have fun with and promote violence, and another group learned that it is shameful to ask for help when you are being bullied or worse, and they came together on our day of madness. So it's a little better now. Things have improved and whistleblowers do have some support, but there are still bullies and cult members who don't want to be good citizens, like some Republican politicians. If there is a personal lesson that I would give along with my story, here's my advice on parenting from a non-parent. Really talk to your kids about their lives in general and school life in particular. Get them to get comfortable telling you what is really happening. Don't judge. Be the cool parent so they will open up. Also, don't overreact. Take notes and get them to nail down the particulars before you go running to the authorities with your complaint. I'm not saying don't do it, but just have a clear picture of what happened. You don't want to accidentally start a witch hunt. Notice when they behave differently. Engage in real conversations. I'm sure it's hard, but I think you have to try. The following is a promotional announcement for a podcast that has not been written, scheduled, or even well planned, so stay tuned and subscribe right now. Hit that little button somewhere. I have a strictly biological theory that small L liberal democracy, along with a worldview that accepts and uses science to inform decisions, is also a result of biological evolution. Kind of like the law of the jungle, but different, a more advanced stage of evolution. To keep it somewhat short, I have to oversimplify things a bit. On our round Earth, we live in a layer much thinner than an eggshell by comparison. This layer is teeming with life. Among the animals, domination and submission is the natural order for many species, including primates and humans for most of our history. It is what happened on the island when the boys were left alone with no authority. Bullying, as shorthand for all kinds of violence, oppression, and abuse, comes out of the primitive brain, the oldest part. The individual is aware of the self, and its genes have programmed it to preserve that self and its offspring. It's the selfish gene theory. Everything we humans have invented since we used a rock has been because the brain got bigger and developed new and improved skills, like the use of tools and language. All mutations are accidents, in the sense that some chemical or radiation caused a change at one of a billion genetic locations, and some huge percentage of mutations are fatal to the cell and its genes disappear. One or more accidents that weren't fatal to the genome resulted in the brain expanding self-awareness into making us other-aware, and that evolved into empathy or caring. It is most likely the offshoot of mothers caring for their young, which enhances their survival rate and therefore their own genes. A couple hundred thousand years later, we still have individuals of the species who don't have the empathy gene, speaking somewhat metaphorically, not strictly scientific. Some become successful CEOs, and some make millions selling religion on TV, and some become dictators, more than willing to take advantage of fearful humans and magnify their fear to their own benefit and profit. And some become their followers, buying into the propaganda that only they are chosen and that the others are not. They build a cult of the vulnerable around the authoritarian leader, like Jack on Fly's Island. A large portion of America's and the world's populations are attracted to that type of system, a strongman and their sycophant followers. They write their own rules and vandalize the society and its institutions to weaken the resistance to their takeover. If normal average people have any choice, a system of fair laws is what most humans would choose, as opposed to the law of the jungle, which has nothing to do with fairness or choice. That's what the founders, as flawed as they were trying to do when they created the Constitution in 1787. A structure to start with and a system to proceed to make it better over time. It's been a hard fight so far, and it's sad to say that it is still and again about race and the assumption of white privilege. Our democracy is at greater risk from today's gimme gangs than it has been for over a century. I would even say ever, but we don't have the time for that. We have to stand together and stand up to them. Don't bend over. Because that's what Republicans in Congress have become, a gimme gang, people with no empathy, or they're just afraid to express it. Here's what Trump made the phrase "Make America Great Again" mean. Give me a strong man, leader, and the law of the jungle, and I will be a willing cult member because I don't have a conscience, I don't care about anyone other than myself, and I choose personal safety and privilege over liberty and equality. Please use your conscience to write letters and emails of support to anyone of either party that votes for rules and reason, not ignorance, fear, and lies. They need to hear from you. Thank you.